All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Mondays. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Hey, Sandy, let's talk about the economy. And even though the war is horrible, man, where are we at in the coming months? You know, the summer rolls around, and it's nice to have some money during the summer. It's always nice to have some money, even during at any point in time. But people like to have it during the warm weather and be able to vacation and all those things. But these things are going to be affected, right, with inflation and...
Well, yeah. I mean, the inflation, first of all, you can to segue from the war is obviously going to create an impetus towards more inflation with food shortages and fuel shortages caused by it. In fact, when a world really gets into a wartime economy, I think yesterday or Friday I mentioned something about ration books. But even during the tail end of Vietnam and in the beginning of the oil embargo, there were price controls, which is an effort by the government to avoid inflation by controlling the rate at which prices can rise.
Do you see that coming?
No, I mean, it doesn't work very well. So, it was replaced by ration books in World War II because price controls are difficult to enforce and create all kinds of artificial problems. But what's happening now is a difficult thing to look at and not get pessimistic about what might happen to the economy, because we have sort of a hot economy. We've got money enough in people's pockets to give them the opportunity and the ability to bid prices up. And in fact, prices have been going up at a much faster rate. If you include fuel and food, it went up over 8% in the most recent 12-month historic period. The last month was sort of better than that because if you took out food and fuel, which are the most volatile of the price things, it was going up at an annual rate of about 3.6%. So some economists like looking at that. That's kind of the rose-colored glasses data. But the fact is that prices are going up quite rapidly, and the most recent interest rate information would suggest the same thing. Well, when interest rates rise, it dampens the economy, and the Federal Reserve, about the only effective tool they've got, other than, well, they have two tools, but the one that's most talked about is their ability to increase interest rates, and they're rather aggressively at that process. So in the early part of inflation, it's because people have money in their pockets to bid prices up. Prices start going up. Now the way to make sure that prices don't continue to go up is to essentially take the money out of those people's pockets. Well, since most of the consumption in this country is carried out by most of the people in this economy, the consumption in this economy is not carried out by the top 10% of the people. It's carried out by basically the other 90%.
Right.
And so if those people no longer are afforded the opportunity to have the money in their pocket to bid the price up, that means they don't have enough money essentially to buy all that they would have bought otherwise. So that's called hardship. And it is true that the tools to fight inflation inflict more damage on the poorer people in the people less able to absorb it in the economy.
But they bid it up via credit, right?
Well, some of it's bid up by credit, and some of it's bid up by the fact that their wages have gone up. I mean, the last year had real wages going up at a rate faster than inflation. Now, that's not going to continue forever, and in fact, the rate of wage increase has slowed down. But we have housing. The rate of price increases in housing has been like a frenzy. And so housing costs are going up dramatically. Clearly, the American public has decided they're willing to spend a higher percentage of their income on housing than they have in the past based on the extreme rate of increase in the price of housing. Prices only go up when people have the money in their pocket to pay for it. Some of that is paid for with credit. That credit gets harder to get when interest rates go up. That's one of the reasons we jack up interest rates, is to make it very much harder for the public to borrow money so they have less money in their pocket to buy things.
So right now, Sandy, still the housing boom, when you talk about, you know, reselling properties and those kinds of things, that's still pretty hot. But if we do know what's coming, and the first thing that's going to be impacted and affected with recession is going to be housing, what happens then? Because, you know, there's a shortage of those right now.
I mean, the first things that happen really are durable goods that slow down. You don't buy the washer or dryer that you can get a couple more years out of your old one. You defer buying a new car. The things that have a lifespan of multiple years that you can stretch the life of your current one so you don't have to replace it. So those things slow down. And then housing does too, although apartment housing, which is probably the lowest 50 percentile of people in this country probably depend on rented housing. Here's the problem is that it's very hard to slow down an economy and put some brakes on without having it tip over into recession, because when you slow down an economy, the inventories that people have built up in the people who are in business and have inventories become excessive inventories. And instead of buying fewer of what they bought to put in inventory, they buy none of what they bought because their inventory can carry them for more time. So you end up that this whole inventory phenomena causes the swing in demand to be much more dramatic than the swing in demand that's happening out there in the marketplace.
And then that creates layoffs?
That creates layoffs because when the people with inventory stop ordering anything, then the people who make it have to slow down what they're doing to try and keep pace with this reduction in inventory demand, and they have layoffs. And when you have layoffs, now you've got less money on the side to buy things, and
now people are really hurting.
And people are hurting then. And so the pill for a hot economy is unfortunately taken disproportionately by the people who can least afford to take it. And that's one of the sins of having an economy in which the rich get richer and the poorer people, like I was saying earlier, there's a lot of people in this economy who are currently living financially insecure, even though we're in a hot economy. And that those 50% of the people who I would bet if we took a survey would indicate that they are today financially insecure will become financially more insecure and feel financially more endangered when we end up having inflation that requires the treatment of higher interest rates.
So help me understand it, because, you know, this is elementary to a lot of us, and we don't understand it. But if the recession comes, I mean, when the recession comes, and inflation is where it is, during the time that the recession is there, what happens to inflation?
Well, there's this thing called stagflation, which is a circumstance that we had in the late 70s in which there was substantial inflation. The country had gotten used to an inflation psychology. And so portions of the economy continued to inflate at a material rate at the same time that we were experiencing a recession. So you had this stagnated economy. If it wasn't a recession, it was a no-growth economy. So if you have no growth in the economy and prices going up, you have the impact of damaging people's pocketbooks.
And a longer-term recovery, I would think.
Well, the recovery, the problem for that was that it took a while to hit inflation over the head with a hammer. So we ended up, it took more than a day or two. Interest rates didn't just plummet when they started this process. So interest rates got all the way up to 15 or 16%.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And then they stayed there for a while. And they didn't get all the way down to 2% until 2008.
So what's new now? I mean, are there new ways to attack it, or are we talking again a decade or more?
Well, You know,
or is that unpredictable?
Well, World War I was the war to end all wars, and it obviously didn't end all wars. And similarly, there's a sort of an arrogance amongst the economists of the world that they think they have become so much more sophisticated at controlling the business cycle that, you know, we've had the depression to end all depressions or what have you. And, of course, neither is true. And we end up having recessions, very deep recessions, that come from surprising places that the economists were never able to foresee, like the mortgage-backed security.
Yeah, 2008.
2008. So will we have another deep recession? Well, we could. Can we control recessions better? We do have a more sophisticated knowledge about the tools we have. We have this quantitative easing tool that we used, in which the government bought not only its own debt securities but mortgage-backed securities. It has trillion-plus dollars worth of these securities that it now could sell back into the market. The sale of those back to the market has an effect of increasing interest rates and depressing
the
economy.
So, Sandy, hold that thought, because we don't want to miss any of that. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.